माधव
कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जना वल्लभा गिरिवरधारी यशोदानंदन व्रज जनरंजन यमुना तीरावन चारी यमुना तीरावन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शतश्री श्रीमद डिवाइन ग्रेस ऐसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी शिल प्रभुपाद की जय। अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय। ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरंग। नारायण नमस्कृत्य नरम चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिके। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 6 चैप्टर 17 टेक्स्ट 21। वी मे नीड द माइक फॉर कमेंट्स। एक सृजति भूतानि भगवान आत्ममायया एषां बंधम च मोक्षम च सुखम दुखम च निष्कलः। एकः सृजति भूतानि भगवान् आत्ममायया येषां बन्धं च मोक्षं च सुखं दुःखं च निष्कलः। एकः सृजति भूतानि भगवान् आत्ममायया येषां बन्धं च मोक्षं च सुखं दुःखं च निष्कलः।
भूतानि
One more. Ekah, one, srujati, creates, bhutani, different varieties of living entities. Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Atmamayaya, by his personal potencies. Esham, of all the conditioned souls. Bandham, the conditional life. Cha, and moksham, the liberated life. Cha, also. Sukham, happiness. Dukham, our dear friend, distress. It just says distress. Cha, and nishkalaha, not affected by the material qualities. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada ki jai. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is one, unaffected by the conditions of material world. He creates all the conditioned souls by his own personal potency. Because of being contaminated by the material energy, the living entity is put into ignorance and thus into different conditions of bondage. Sometimes, by knowledge, the living entity is given liberation. In Sattva Guna and Rajoguna, he is subjected to happiness and distress. Report. The question may be raised why the living entities are situated in different conditions and who has arranged this. The answer is that it has been done by the Supreme Personality of Godhead without anyone's help. The Lord has his own energies, parasya shaktir vividhaiva shruyate. And one of them, namely the external energy, creates the material world and the varieties of happiness and distress for the conditioned souls under the supervision of the Lord. The material world consists of three modes of material nature, sattva-guna, rajoguna, and tamoguna. By sattva-guna, the Lord maintains the material world. By rajoguna, he creates it. And by tamoguna, he annihilates it. After the varieties of living entities are created, they are subject to happiness and distress according to their association. When they are in sattva guna, the mode of goodness, they feel happiness. When in rajoguna, they are distress. And when in tamoguna, they have no sense of what to do or what is right and wrong. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chaksur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Namaom Vishnupadaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Itinamine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Vanchakalpaturubhyascha Kripasindhubhya evacha patitanam pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivas Adigora Bhaktabhinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So Chitraketu is speaking. For our friends who just joined us, if you're not familiar with what's going on, quickly, Chitraketu, he became the king of the Vidyadhara planet. One day, he was flying on his beautiful airplane with 10 million drop-dead gorgeous ladies. And he saw Lord Shiva giving or having discussions with very great sages. And the discussion was about Krishna, of course. The sages were there. But the only thing was Lord Shiva was sitting with Parvati Devi on his lap. Now that's a very, as we've discussed, or we've been discussing, that's a very unconventional way of giving a Bhagavatam class. So just as we are amused and smiling, Chitraketu also smiled and chuckled and said, "Hey, Lord Shiva, wow." His intention was to glorify Lord Shiva. But Manoj, he's doing something again with it after you've done something. He said, "Wow, look at you." He was actually, what he meant to say was that you're so sense controlled that you can sit like that and not be disturbed. Now Lord Shiva didn't say anything, he just smiled, kept quiet, because he didn't take any offense. The sages who were in the assembly, they also kept quiet because Lord Shiva kept quiet. So, like they say in Hindi, humko kya karna hai? And it's also nothing wrong. If Lord Shiva has not objected, why should we object? But Mother Parvati Devi, she took objection. And she said, "My dear son, you're speaking about the personality whose lotus feet are worshipped by Brahma and all the other great sages and demigods in the universe. And by laughing at him, you seem to convey as if he doesn't have his senses controlled or he doesn't know what he's doing. And since the other Mahajanas haven't objected, why do you have a problem? So since you've spoken out of place and inappropriately, I curse you to become a demon, because that's very demon-like mentality. May you become a demon." And Chitraketu immediately got off the airplane, and he didn't say, "Well, hold on, I think there's some misunderstanding." He didn't say anything like that. He folded his hands and he said, "Mother, whatever curse you've offered, I accept." And then he's speaking these verses. Now, what I thought we'll do is because every day we're doing one verse at a time or maybe two verses at a time. It's nice once in a while to see the big picture and analyze the order in which Chitraketu is making his prayers. The bottom line, or if you want, the headline of the prayer is the Chitraketu is not blaming Mother Parvati. Like generally, when we find something wrong, the first thing we do, or there's a tendency for the conditioned soul, is to blame someone or to blame something. "Oh, it's not because of me, it's because of him, or it's because the situation was like this." Somehow we have a conditioned soul as a tendency to ascribe the fault or the cause outside of himself. And then then he looks into his own heart at the very end. After he has come to his senses and some time has passed, and something he may say, "Oh, I should have also." But he shouldn't have said like that. So still we say we'll share the blame. How about that? Let's settle with sharing the blame. 50% you take, 50% I take. Or how about this? Even if I were to take 90% of the blame, 10%, you know, you shouldn't have done that. Otherwise, like that. In the cases of great personalities, they're teaching us that they don't look outside for anything. They don't try to blame anyone. So he's not blaming Parvati, although she has cursed him for something that he had not intended to say in a bad way. So here are his prayers. First thing. When Chitraketu was cursed by Parvati Devi, this is text 16. He descended from his airplane, bowed before her with great humility, and pleased her completely. He immediately disarmed her anger by saying. Because when someone's angry, if you confront it with your own anger or justification, it makes things worse. We see sometimes when a mother or a parent is chastising a child, if the child justifies, the parent becomes even more irked. Oh, not only did you do wrong, now you're justifying yourself. But if the child learns to say, or whoever learns to say, first thing, I'm so sorry, then it just disarms the whole situation. So here he bowed down before her with great humility, and she was thoroughly pleased. So she's a very compassionate mother. And then he said, my dear mother, with my own hands folded together, I accept the curse upon me. So he has brought about Parvati Devi's words to come true. I do not mind the curse, for happiness and distress are given by the demigods as a result of one's past deeds. So this, I accept the curse upon me, is something that we as devotees can practice, is circumstances that are forced upon us, right? We do find that circumstances are forced upon us. For example, the harsh winter, we didn't bring it upon ourselves, it was forced upon us. Of course, our karma is such that we have to be in Chicago. We don't know if it's good karma or bad karma, but it's karma. We're in Chicago and it's very cold. So a devotee learns to first accept every circumstance. Here's a definition of suffering. Suffering means not to accept our circumstances. And as long as we don't accept them, we will suffer. Because the moment you accept, the suffering mitigates. Okay, this is how it's going to be. So first thing is to accept the situation. Accept the situation doesn't mean that you don't do anything about it. You understand? There's a difference. Sometimes people get mistaken that accepting a situation means that you have to go with the flow. Accepting the situation means that you acknowledge that this is the situation and I may not be able to change it. Most of our struggle is to try to change the circumstances. We try very hard. And in some cases, one has to change. Let's say there is a very abusive relationship. Husband's every day beating the wife like anything. Unless she is like very exalted, like Parvati Devi or Sati or Sita Devi or someone like that, and they were never abused, they have the ability to just tolerate the whole thing or transcend the whole circumstance. But in most cases, one needs to change the circumstance. One should. In our case, the first thing is to just accept, okay, this is how things are going to be. Once you accept, then there can be a plan of what to do, how to respond best in such a circumstance. So he's accepted it. And then he says, happiness and distress are given by the demigods because of one's own past deeds. So he's removed the responsibility of that curse from Mother Parvati and taken it upon himself. It's my own past misdeed. Or something, my own past deed for which today the demigods have inspired that I should be cursed. Next verse. Then he says, deluded by ignorance, the living entity wanders in the forest of this material world, enjoying the happiness and distress resulting from his past deeds everywhere and at all times. Therefore, dear mother, neither you nor I am to be blamed for this incident. So then he says, that happiness and distress, they come from the past deeds. So somewhere in the past, something has happened by which this has manifested today. So at this point, I can't blame you. Really, I can't blame myself either. Like in this circumstance, I can't blame. In this lifetime, I can't blame myself. I see. Where is he going with this? He's saying that there is some higher order arrangement. That's the point he's making. The higher order arrangement is that there is a karmic system by which every living entity is brought exactly the happiness and the distress that he fully deserves at all times. It's a perfect system. A little side point. Therefore, what do persons with knowledge do according to Narada Muni? Tasyaiva hetu prayatetu kovidaha na labhyate yad bhramatam upariyadaha tallabhate sukhavad anyat tallabhate dukhavad anyato sukham kalena sarvatra gabhira ramhasa. Narada says, because happiness and distress, they're already ordained for a person. No one can stop the happiness that is supposed to come to us. And no one can stop the distress that is also supposed to come to us. So Kovida, the knowledgeable persons, they do not spend their time maneuvering and manipulating the happiness and distress features of this material world. They shoot for something that is beyond the material world, that cannot be achieved either going to Brahmaloka or down to the lowest of planets. It makes sense. When you can't change something, it's not in your capacity, why try? Why not shoot for something else, which is possible, which isn't within our reach, if you will. So the next verse he says, in this material world, neither the living entity himself nor others are the cause of material happiness and distress. Because of gross ignorance, the living entity thinks that he and others are the cause. So this is where he's removing other living beings and oneself as the cause of one's happiness and distress. This is philosophical, it makes sense. Because our sense, our experience of happiness and distress is nothing but the culture of our mind and the contact of the senses with the sense objects. When we touch, let's say touch, tactile sense. When we touch something smooth or very something that's very pleasing to our sense of touch. Usually something smooth is very pleasing. Moment it is slimy or scaly, either the skin of a snake or an alligator, it's generally a little gross. Not for everyone. Some people put snakes around themselves a little far off, but far out, as they say. I know some persons whose pets are snakes, and they're happy to share their pets with others. No, put it around your neck, Krishna, Krishna. Some people also like, and then I know one person, very nice friend of mine, very good-hearted man. He has a lizard as a pet. And you've seen a lizard skin. The reason it has such a skin, that's part of its defense mechanism. Like he's so ugly that no one would want to go near him. But then he sits there, looks around, moves his head, and eyes move in different independently. That's how the lizards are. So he takes the lizard out of his cage, puts it on his shirt, and he asked Prahlad, "You want to pet him?" And this fellow also petted him. Told Prahlad, "Don't enter the house." It's like, but my lizard. But our senses, according to the culture of our mind, we like or don't like something. That's all that's happening. But the person thinks, if I do something, I will cause circumstances for my happiness. If that person, this person, they do something or don't do something, my happiness and distress will be caused by them. For example, if you speak to me in a harsh way, I'm holding you as the cause for my distress. If you speak to me in a very nice way, glorifying me, you're the cause of my happiness. Actually, the cause is not outside of me. Because for the great sages yesterday, was it yesterday? The day before, Paramakaruna narrated the story of the Avanti Brahmana. For the Avanti Brahmana, when all others were glorifying, he was in a different mood. But when he became fully renounced, people were spitting at him, kicking him, passing air on his face. When he would be sitting with his begging bowl, they would urinate into his begging bowl. They would pelt him with stones. And he said, they are not the cause of my distress. Wow, that's... So he's saying, others are not the cause of my happiness or distress. The next, he says, the material world resembles the waves of a constantly flowing river. Therefore, there is a, what is the curse and what is a favor? What is a curse today? You'll see in the case of Chitraketu, the curse of Parvati Devi becomes a blessing in disguise. Sometimes a so-called blessing becomes a curse in disguise. When someone says, oh, please give me such and such blessing that, oh, I may be materially very well off. That blessing is a curse in disguise. So Prabhupada narrates a story which we've heard many times of a saintly person. He comes to a town and he meets different people and he gives them blessings. Right? Rajaputra Chiranjeeva, Muniputra Mahajeeva. Then he meets a butcher and he says, Mahajeeva Mahamara. And to a devotee he says, Jeevova Amarova. Same person gives four different blessings according to their situations. Rajaputra Chiranjeeva. A prince, may you have a very long life. And why is that? Prabhupada explains that the prince is so steeped in sense gratification that the karmic reactions in his next life are going to be terrible. So he tells him, live very long. Don't face it so soon. Live very long. To Muniputra, the son of a yogi, he says, Ma jiva mama, don't live, don't die. He says, don't live because there's nothing for you in this material world. And don't die because you have not perfected yet, so don't die yet. To a butcher, he says, I messed up. Rajaputra Chiranjeeva, Muniputra Ma jiva. To a yogi's son, he says, don't live because this material world is not for you. There's so much sense gratification opportunities. Your mind will cause you distress. Just don't live. May you die. To the butcher, he says, don't live, don't die. Don't live because every day you are chopping off so many innocent animals. Don't live such a life. And don't die because your head will be on the chopping block very soon. So don't live, don't die. And to the devotee, he says, Jeevova, Morova, whether you live or you die, it doesn't matter. Because when you're living, you're serving. And after you die, wherever the destination is, you'll continue serving. So it's irrelevant whether you live or you die. So what is a curse and what's a favor? We don't know, we can't tell. What looks like a curse today can be a favor tomorrow. What looks like a favor today can be a curse tomorrow. What looks like a curse today can be a curse tomorrow. What looks like a favor today can be a favor tomorrow. Who knows? Things change. And he says, what are the heavenly planets? What are the hellish planets? What's actually happiness? What is distress? Because the waves flow constantly, none of them has an eternal effect. Comes and goes. What does Krishna say in the Bhagavad Gita about this? Chapter 2, text 14. 13. 14. Matra sparshas sukauteya. Sita ushna sukha dukkada. Agama apayano nityas. Tam titikshasva bharata. What you're thinking is happiness and distress will come and go. Just as the summer and winter seasons come and go. All you have to do is learn to tolerate, just stay put. Things will change. Like when I first came to America, I went to this really fantastic happening place in the entire US of A called Stillwater, Oklahoma. Boy, it's such a traumatic experience, I can't forget it even now. And it was just too bad. In like 5 minute increments, the weather keeps changing. Suddenly hot, 75, 80 degrees. 5 minutes later, dark green clouds and a twister or tornado is about to hit the ground. And, 10 minutes later, it's freezing cold and hail. And another 15 minutes later, bright, warm sunshine. Like, what's going on? And I guess the phrase first time I heard is, oh, if you don't like the, I don't even know how to say it in that southern accent, but if you don't like the weather in Oklahoma, wait a few minutes. Because it will change again. It's just so unpredictable. It will keep changing. It's like that. Krishna says, Sitoshna Sukha Dukkha, Sita and Ushna. Very cold, very hot, and keeps changing all the time. Also, a little side interpretation, if you will, of the Sitoshna is people are also sometimes cold and sometimes warm, and it keeps changing. Somebody is warm today, cold tomorrow. What happened, Prabhu? I don't know. Sometimes cold today, warm tomorrow. Like, what do you want? When people are just warm to you suddenly, then the first question you have to think about is, what do you want? That's a joke on the side. But anyway. So he says, what is this? It keeps changing anyway. And today he's saying, Eka sajati bhutani bhagavan atmamayaya. Esham bandham cha moksham sa sukham dukham cha nishkalaha. It is the Supreme Personality of Godhead who has created the living entities. And the living entities create, quote unquote, create their own bondage and liberation depending upon how they interact with the material energy. Very simple. If we learn to not mess with the material energy, we don't get influenced by the material energy. We go mess with it, she messes with us. Very simple. So the art of, living in this material world is to learn how to not meddle with the material energy, although we are right in it. So in the fifth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives that principle, the visual is Padma Patram Evam Bhasa, like a lotus leaf in water. The leaf is in the water, murky water. The leaf never becomes wet. So generally people think that, oh, if the material world is very contaminating, let me find a place where it is always sattvic, the mountains or whatever, and stay there because otherwise I'm scared. Okay, at some point in time that may be helpful. Like we don't necessarily walk into the mouth of a tiger. Not necessary. But we understand that overall that is not our method anyway. We want to transcend that situation. Okay. So the yogis will say, oh, I want to run away. I want to, if not run away, I want to retreat to a place where there is no such danger. But how long can one live like that? How long can we close our eyes, shut our ears, starve our tongues, stop breathing, because if I breathe the fragrance of someone or something, my mind gets disturbed. How long is that possible? And so we may need in the short term to build sufficient strength so that doesn't bother us. But the real thing is to learn to become unaffected by it. Now, how do we learn that? We have great examples. We pray to those examples. We meditate on those examples. Once in Boston, Srila Prabhupada was in a taxi, because at that time they didn't have cars. So they had hired a cab to receive Prabhupada at the airport. And Srila Satsarup Maharaj was sitting in the front, Prabhupada sitting in the back. And of course, Prabhupada was dressed like a sannyasi. So the taxi driver turned around and said, "You one of them swamis, huh?" "Yes." I said, "Oh, can you perform some magic, some mystic things?" Because he thought that that's what swamis do. That is their yogic power, that they will show something, you know. And Prabhupada said, "My yogic potency is that I can be in a room full of naked women and not be disturbed." The taxi driver said, "Huh." He didn't understand what Prabhupada was saying. That the point is to be in the world. I think there's a phrase by Jesus, I don't know for sure, that you can be in the world but not of the world. Generally we tend to isolate ourselves because there's danger at every step. Bhagavatam says that. There's danger at every step. But instead of isolating, our I guess call to action as followers of Lord Chaitanya is to insulate ourselves. That insulating, I guess, potency is our service mentality. That service mentality, when it is imbued by or imbued with compassion, it helps protect. Protect us from, as soon as that shifts, then those people, the circumstances, they become very attractive. The lotus leaf or the leaf becomes wet, if you will. So he's saying here that one's happiness and distress is the outcome of a person interacting with the modes of nature. So we need to learn how to interact with the modes of nature. What's the best way? To transcend them. Not to allow the modes to influence us. The mode of ignorance will influence us into dark, destructive, despondent, defeatist type of attitudes. The mode of passion is like an abrasive, right? Sandpaper. What happens when you rub sandpaper against something? It removes, there's heat, and it removes layers from that object. It's abrasive. Mode of passion is like that. It's an abrasive. Causes distress. Because it has this raja. Raja means dust, sand. And mode of goodness is better, or the best among the three, but there's also a problem in the mode of goodness. Like, problem, transcendently considering. Conditionally considering, that's the best thing to do. Get to the mode of goodness, somehow or the other. Transcendently speaking, the mode of goodness still keeps us in the world. It binds us to knowledge and happiness. So we'll see in the life of great devotees that they are not attached to their happiness. They will give up their happiness for serving Krishna. They will give up their comfort for serving Krishna. That's important. They say, move out of your comfort zone. Move out of your comfort. This is nice. I don't want to change this. No. They go out. They go out of their that situation that makes them, this is nice. To make it even more. So the examples, if one is in the nectar of devotion, that Krishna's friend, I think his name is Dharuka, he's fanning Krishna. And as he's fanning Krishna, his heart is ecstatic. And from that ecstasy, tears are manifesting. Tears of happiness are manifesting. And he's just completely joyful doing that service for Krishna. And he immediately checks himself. My own tears of happiness are not important because that's obstructing my service to Krishna. So he checks his ecstasy to continue his service to Krishna. Or what better example than our founder Acharya, thoroughly retired, comfortable in Radha Damodar temple. Can you imagine that? Radha Damodar temple. This is Jiva Goswami's deities, one of the most renowned temples in Vrindavan. And out of his window, he can see Rupa Goswami's samadhi and bhajan kutir. And every day in the morning, he's in the courtyard, Radha Damodar courtyard, if you've seen it. He's right there. All the other Brajvasis are there. He's writing his commentary to Bhagavatam, but restless that he has something to give the world. So he moves out of that very comfortable, I guess even this because his spiritual world condition to come. Because one's own comfort is not the criterion. One's own happiness at one stage is not the consideration. It's not about my comfort, my happiness. It is what is needed for serving Krishna. And in fact, even if it is distressful, that is okay for me. That's of course a little higher, but we'd learn to appreciate it. When we speak of ideals, we were discussing yesterday that our real condition may be quite different from the ideal, right? But why do we discuss the ideal in the first place? Ideal of service, let's say Prabhupada left the spiritual place like Vrindavan and came to this, or Prahlad Maharaj was like that, or someone Daruka was checking his ecstasy. Like, why do we speak of the ideal? Enhance the gratitude. Yeah, one should know what's the goal look like. That's one. Another? To humble, to have a real sense of how far we are from it. So it gives some motivation to do something about it. Otherwise, we fall into the PDS, right? Pure devotee syndrome. Oh, I've made it. Somehow reached 17, 16, I've made it. I've entered the spiritual world. Done. Wonderful lunch, wonderful breakfast. Everyone's nice to me in general. In general, everyone's nice. Once in a while, some fallen devotee will say something bad, but that's their problem, not mine. I made it to 17, 16. How far we are from that ideal. And the third reason is to appreciate those who are there. Like, wow, what a place. Very amazing. They are worthy. My ability to offer respect and prayer is definitely worthwhile in respecting them for being in that position. Somehow they have gotten there. So we speak of them. So yes, we cultivate the mode of goodness. Our path of progression is that we come to the mode, we try to live a mode of goodness lifestyle. But within our mode of goodness lifestyle, actually is a devotional lifestyle. That's the difference. Maybe I'll say it differently. Our devotional lifestyle already includes a mode of goodness lifestyle. But a mode of goodness lifestyle is not necessarily devotional. People can be vegetarian, they can be peaceful, non-violent. They can want to do service for others. All that may be there. But if Krishna is not the objective of one's life, it is not devotional. This is the little difference between sattvika and uttama or transcendental. So when we are serving, when we are bathing, putting on clean clothes, speaking with others, doing, we have to be conscious that it is service to Krishna. That's what makes it transcendental versus it's a very goodness type of life. Because a very goodness life has a consequence. And what is that? There's one consequence, one more birth. Because goodness will reward us a birth. because you have to enjoy the rewards of being in goodness. We don't want even a very high goodness activity. We want to try to make it transcendental. So it's right in the forefront of our consciousness that Krishna, we are trying to serve Krishna. That is why we're doing what we're doing. Bathing, wearing clean cloth, putting on tilak, everything that we do from morning till night, we try and bring progressively, step by step, into the fold of this is service to Krishna. This is service to the Vaishnavas and Sri Guru, like that. Goodness is wonderful. I'm not saying bad things about it. We need to transcend. Learn to transcend them one after the other. Transcend. Bring one activity after another, even from goodness into transcendence. And the strength to do that, the memory, the conviction to do that, comes from our sadhana practices. That's pretty much the verse in terms of context, in context with the rest of the verses. Any comments or question? You want to add something? You'd like to delete something? Yeah. Jai Baladev.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for another enlightening and comical class, like always. So, you mentioned that verse where Narada Muni, I think, said, we should endeavor for, you know, the highest goal of life, you know, because you can't change your happiness and it's already destined. And so I always kind of wondered about that point. And I kind of realized there was many things that gave me that realization, including some TV show, actually, a long time ago. But basically, everyone's working hard, let's say, win a lottery or try to be like Oprah Winfrey or Bill Gates. But it's not possible. Nobody could, you know, be like that. And so I remember one TV show growing up. It was actually an old TV show. Leave It to Beaver, I think. So it was funny. The older brother told the smaller brother he was like, if everyone was rich, then who will the rich have to push around? And so I thought this was a very enlightening point. It's not possible. And so one other point I wanted to make before I ask. My question is, in this regard, can you, if it's possible, if there's any time left, can you narrate the story of Bhrigu Muni and the three demigods? Because, you know, you didn't get that in last time. So this just seems very relevant to this topic. But before I get, if you have time to get to that, you make the point that sometimes our happiness is dependent on, like, let's say somebody says something to us, and then that makes us feel good if they say something good, or if somebody says something, you know, mean to us, you're like, you're the cause of my happiness and the stress. And so when I read the Bhagavad Gita, when I came across the term modes of material nature, I never got it. I was like, what does modes mean? And I didn't really look it up until like a few years ago.
It means.
Huh?
Go ahead.
Mode. So I looked it up.
The vehicle. It's a mode of transport. I take a car. I take a bus. It's the means of by which nature interacts with us.
So even reading that term modes, I feel like I'm missing something. I still really don't get it. Like how to. So in the fourth canto, chapter 26 of Puranjana. I mean, Prabhupada uses this term many times. He switches modes of nature to laws of nature. And so when he said that in that canto, I was like, okay, that makes a lot more sense to me because I was thinking in terms of, like, it's the law of nature. If someone says something to make me upset, then I get upset. It's the law, you know, if someone says something nice to me, then, you know, I become happy. So I'm influencing by these laws. It's a law. And so in the Gita, Krishna says how to transcend these laws. And that's why I love this pastime, Bhrigu Muni, so much of how one can. It gives a practical example of how one can be humble and transcend these laws. So if anyone, you know, doesn't have anything else, but...
I had a different pastime to share, but let's see if there's more topics. Yes, Rob.
I have a question. Usually it is said that when we do something wrong, instead of passing the blame on to others, we should accept the blame. When we do something good, we should give the credit to the Lord. So there appears a kind of a dichotomy or dilemma. Means, in both the case, I am the doer. I don't say I am the doer, but I am externally performing the action. Material nature is there. Supreme Personality of God is there. But in one case, I take the blame. In another case, I give the credit. So this appears. I'm sure you must have come across this kind of question.
So it appears contradictory to what?
Yeah, so either in both the cases I accept the blame, or in both the cases I say credit to the Krishna. That.
So I slapped someone and say, Krishna wanted me to slap you, so don't blame me. Correct? Yes. Or someone, I do something nice to someone and say, Krishna wanted me to do. Or I slap someone and say, I felt like it. I take the blame. Don't blame Lord Krishna. Blame me. And if something nice also, don't give the credit to Lord Krishna. It was my own individual free will by which I did this.
Yes, yeah, so the last example that you, that likes, looks like more consistent to my mind. So otherwise, the first thing that I said, that looks like a little inconsistent. So that's the question.
I'll be honest, I'm failing to see the question. I understand the circumstance. What's the question?
So question is, how to understand that if I'm doing something wrong, I am to be blamed. But if I'm the same person doing something good is happening by me, I should pass the credit to Guru Parampara, to Krishna.
Okay. So let's deal with the latter first. We are trying to be devotees of Krishna and we are learning the laws of love. And the one of the laws of love is, I'm talking of love for Krishna, not anything else. I'm not an expert at the other ones. The laws, I'm not expert at this one either, but the laws of love for Krishna is that whatever happens, we understand that it is Krishna's mercy by which something is happening, because it is ontologically true and devotionally also true. So it actually gives the love even more oomph or joy to give the credit to the beloved. That is something we have to learn, the laws of love. Just this morning on the altar, Prabhupada is saying, boy loves girl, girl loves boy. They say, I love you. Actually, what they're doing is they're fulfilling their own sense gratification need through the other. But love is to give. Like, well, it's because of you. And to take the blame that, oh, I did something that was not proper, is also the devotional feature that I may have misused my free will in a particular way other than in a loving way. And that is why the particular mode of nature is interacting with me in this way. Because I allowed myself to resonate with the mode of ignorance or with the mode of passion. So naturally, that's what I will get. You understand? So love, the feature is to give all that credit to the beloved and to take the fault upon oneself. Even if the fault is in the beloved. No, that's because. Of course, Krishna doesn't make mistakes. But then a devotee never ascribes any mistake to Krishna. For in the Sudama's pastime, this is what I've been reading, Krishna did not give Sudama what he came for. In fact, he took his gift forcibly, but did not give anything. Sudama never walked out of the house thinking, and he took the gift I brought, but he never gave me anything. His point was, I'm glad he didn't give me something. Otherwise, you know, I have a tendency, or I may feel the tendency of asking. But he just gave his darshan, which was fantastic. He made me sit on Rukmini Devi's bed. She fanned me personally. Oh, it's nothing, and there's nothing in his, no fault in him. So that's how free will is used. But I willingly give the credit to him and willingly take the blame or fault upon myself. Okay, so that's the law of love, if you will. He's speaking more philosophically to Mother Parvati. So one of the pastimes, actually I don't have time, so forget it. Yeah, Jitendra Prabhu.
Just thinking, it says that as long as one is attached to material enjoyment, bhakti yoga cannot be understood. And I was thinking, it says we're not supposed to disturb sentient beings, you know, and we're supposed to excuse the minor offenses of others. But how far are we supposed to go with that?
As far as our realization allows us to go. Each person has their limit of realization.
Yeah.
I can forgive the small offenses. But then what is small and what is big? For each person, something is small or big relatively. But for pure devotees, if you will, small means all offenses directed to oneself are small. All offenses directed to another devotee or the Lord are big.
Yeah.
Hey, you can call me a rascal, but anything else?
Because when you're being offended, you're supposed to tolerate it. But if somebody else is being offended, you're not supposed to tolerate it.
That is correct.
You know, as far as going to places to preach, Prabhupada said, go to some place that's favorable. Remember the devotees said, we're going to Pakistan.
Yeah, I was just about to say Pakistan. You know that story?
Yeah, maybe I do.
Okay,
but please. Prabhupada says, well, if you go there, Krishna will give you special mercy.
Right. And they went.
Yeah.
You know that story? They went.
Yeah, and I think
Brahmananda,
it was Brahmananda, right?
Brahmananda Swami and one more. They went. And it was at the time when India and Pakistan were at war, 1971, and Bangladesh became an independent country during that time. And the environment was surcharged with this anti-Hindu and anti-Muslim, and the countries were at war. And Prabhupada immediately sent a message to Brahmananda Swami and whoever, the other person, right now, leave Pakistan and come. Like right now. So they got a telegram. They got on a bus, I believe. And the bus was coming towards the border when the border forces, they stopped the bus, they got everyone out, and they looked at these two people dressed in Swami clothes in Pakistan. So then they were in front of a firing squad with their guns. And Brahmananda Swami turns to the devotee and says, Prabhu, put your hand in your bead bag, we're going back to Godhead. That was his statement to the devotee at that moment. And the conviction was, you chant the holy name in that circumstance. Hare Krishna. And something, they were told, you too, we can go. And it was just like miraculous.
Well, Srila Prabhupada thought that they were killed, and he became very remorseful.
And then they showed up. Somehow they made it. And there's another pastime of Indradumna Swami and B.B. Govinda Swami. They were also in such a place, and there was this Muslim, that country was primarily Islamic, and they were a little, the soldiers were a little intolerant of other religions, and they were dressed in Vaishnav cloth. So they were said, who are you? You know, with their guns pointed at them. And somehow they had the presence of mind that they said, we are imams. Imam means high priest. Oh, they put their guns down, offered their respects. Oh, please, please go this way. You know, we are imams from a different country, they said. And they were led to go. So Krishna gives wonderful intelligence in the midst of dangerous conditions.
I also heard that as time progresses and the Muslims, you know, are getting such a bad name for being so violent, other Muslims are stepping in front and say, you know, please don't do this and stuff. But I heard that, you know, this is about 20 years ago, that after 75 years, nobody will want to identify themselves as being a Muslim anymore because they've got such a bad reputation.
I'm not going to comment on Muslim or anything because it doesn't matter what religion one belongs to. If one is devoid of Krishna consciousness, they are violent. It doesn't matter this religion, that religion, they're violent. Therefore, Krishna says, the first order of things, amanitvam, adambitvam, and ahimsa.
Devotional service as opposed to commotional service. Hare Krishna.
Navayogendra Maharaj's, there's a statement, no? No devotion. No, there are more things. No devotion.
No promotion. No promotion, no commotion.
Something he said. The punchline is missing. Paramakarna, you heard something? Not an expert in Islam, sorry. Okay, thank you very much. Before we say that. Something relevant to this or pastime or what?
It's just a last question. But I thought saw my hand earlier. It's no problem. We can talk later.
Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Thank you. Boga seva. It used to be boga ki. Hey, Himanshu, can I speak with you for a moment?